So welcome to Series 5, Episode 10 of Conversation on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 5, Episode 10, the screenplay was done by David Fox. It was directed by Sally Ann Kerr. And the episode synopsis read up by Sabine.
May switches loyalties as Jack tries to get to the bottom of the Zoot appearances. Trudy comes face to face with her greatest fear. And Slade makes an impression on Ebony.
Before we begin, I just have to ask you guys, because I need to know if it's just me. I need you to verify I was here. I recorded episode 9 with you, right? I didn't miss anything because when I watched this episode, I was like, did I miss a whole episode?
I'm so glad that you brought this up because obviously I wasn't in episode 9 and I came into this episode and I was going to ask you guys how much have I actually missed between 8 and 10 because, yeah, it feels like we've jumped so far ahead.
No, it's just like part of the group picked up, well, apparently Jay picked up a shovel and then Pride was suddenly underground, buried, and nobody said more than two words.
Good.
And that was that. And then we were here.
I legit felt like I was dropped in the middle of something and I was like, whoa, what did I miss? And I was like, I felt like my brain was gaslighting me because I was like, no, I was here last week. I did episode 9 with them. Why do I feel like I completely missed something, like a whole page or a whole chapter? I don't know. It was just weird. And also, did it go by really? I just felt like they jumped into the action in a way, and I can't explain it. I just felt like I missed something. Like, oh, this is what we're doing now? Like, what? Okay. I feel like they could have had some conversations about what they were planning to do in the last episode where almost nothing happened except Pride died, you know what I mean? It was just a little odd. It just felt a little odd to me, and I was a little like, it took me a minute to catch up. And then it sped by really fast. Like, the episode was just suddenly over, and I was like, wait, it's already over?
Yeah, because last episode we had, well, Celine and Amber deciding they were going to go to the Ecos to bring back the talisman. So logically this episode they do.
No, I get that. I'm just, I guess it was like when they were with Jay and like, I don't know. I can't really explain why I felt I was missing some things. That's all. I just was thrown in the middle of the action. I was like, whoa, when was this established? What are we doing? okay.
No, I did feel the same, Liz. And I thought it was just me because obviously I wasn't in for episode 9. But we have found this earlier on with other episodes in this season. There have been these kind of pacing issues.
Yeah, it's like nothing happens in one episode and then suddenly a lot happens in the next one.
Yeah, and also it feels like things are happening off screen, conversations are happening off screen, and then we get into the main episode and it's like they're doing the action before we even know what it was they were going to do.
Yeah, thank you, Tamsin. You described it perfectly. That's what I felt.
Oh, thank you.
I felt like, you know, some of these things could have been established. Some of them, you know, obviously, I mean, logically, this all works, but I was like, oh, okay, you guys didn't really talk about this last episode, and it's that whole pacing issue.
I wonder if it's just my low expectations.
I mean, also, I think, you know how they probably film in chunks, right? And you can tell that they've jumped in a chunk here from the last, because, like, the first scene, Trudy's hair is the way it was. It had the blue. And then suddenly it's the next scene. She's in her purple look with the hair. You know, her hair looks different. And so I'm like, okay, they must have taken a short break during filming and they've jumped into the next block of filming. And then and you can feel it. That's all. Maybe that's what it is.
I've got to be honest. I think season 5 has some of the worst continuity we've ever seen in the tribe when it comes to hair and costuming. Because Jack's hair has gone from telephone box red to now orange within a shot. And then, as you say, we've had issues with Trudy's hair. We've had issues with Amber's hair. And, yeah, the whole thing, it feels so chaotic.
I think they were doing a lot of other things at the same time.
Mm. I also had that awful familiar pang when the episode started and the music started. I got that awesome feeling like, oh yeah, I'm watching The Tribe. And then the episode started, I was like, oh, that's right, I'm in season 5. I got excited when I heard the music the way I always do when I pop in season 1. You know what I mean? And it's true. By this time in my rewatches, I've usually gone back by now. You know what I mean? It just happened today. It caught me off guard. I'm listening to the music and I'm just like, oh my gosh, the piano, The Dream Must Stay Alive. And I had that familiar feeling that I've had gotten for years every time I'd pop in the beginning of The Tribe. And then the episode, I was like, oh, that's right, we're in season 5. That's right. And
but by now you've done this.
I know, but it hasn't happened in a while. You know what I mean? Like, it's been a while since I've forgotten what I was watching.
This is usually the point. This is usually the point of season 5 where you give up and skip back to season 1.
This is like, I was so excited that I was like, oh, crap. I got very sad for about 30 seconds. I can't believe it caught me off guard.
The episode kicks off directly from the previous one. Mega outlines the situation to May, promising her power over the Morats in exchange for her cooperation. And he states that the Morats never cared for her anyway.
You'll work with me. Keep me up to date with developments.
Writing on the Morats, you mean?
What have they ever done for you? Admit it. You don't owe them a thing.
You seem pretty sure of yourself.
I'm sure of you, May. I've watched you trying to fit in with those verts, trying to play it their way. They're over there right now, holding a wake for their friend. Do you think they care where you are? Or what you're doing?
Combined with her uncertainty over Stat's fate, May quickly comes around. So yeah, what did you make of Mega's emotional manipulation of May here, and of course, May's decision to betray the Morats?
He was spot on.
Meant to be, like, it's meant to feel suspenseful, like, oh, is May going to betray the Morats? But it doesn't really stand up when she tried to have Celine killed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, at that point, you've crossed a line. No one is surprised that she's willing to spy on the Morats for Mega. When she tried to kill one of them, tried to get one of them killed. So it doesn't work as like a, oh my gosh, you're biting your nails. Is she going to do it? Is he going to be able to manipulate her into do? It's like, obviously he's going to be able to, like, give me a break.
Yeah.
And it's not like he said anything that wasn't true.
And it's not the first time we've seen her do this either. So it's just a rinse and repeat of what we saw her do with the Chosen.
Yeah, she was always going to do this.
Yeah, this didn't work for me.
Not for me, it's like, she was always going to do this. And, well, what Mega said, it was just, you know, from May's point of view, very true. Yeah, it doesn't take a lot of convincing for someone.
It does highlight the fact that Mega has got a great read on all of these characters. Even someone like May, he is able to push her buttons because he's actually noticed her.
Why didn't this work for you, Lance?
Oh, I forgot.
I'm sorry.
No, he didn't want to say it didn't work.
That's it. Just because what we were talking about earlier, because it wasn't suspenseful at all, because he knew she was going to betray them. So keeping this as the beginning and an opening for this episode just didn't work, because like, we knew this already. So it wasn't suspenseful. It didn't really have any impact for me. So it was like, it just didn't work in that way.
It feels like one episode to me combined, like one scene.
Yeah, it's like they had to split it and feed it into this episode because of what happened in the last episode, because it just didn't work.
I think I saw it as one episode, so
okay.
Not that surprising to me.
That probably worked better.
we had the longer episodes. We had like 1 and 2 combined, 3 and 4 combined with all those seasons.
Yeah. I feel like the reason why May turns traitor with the Chosen, and the reason why she does it with this time with the Technos, the first time she didn't really know the Morats, they weren't that close, okay? And She's always been about saving herself. That's the really important thing to me. Now, this time, I think maybe she has more of a reason to turn on the mole rats, because they never really, well, they never tried to look for her when she was taken by the technos. Pride moved on, Selene moved on, everyone in that mole moved on while she was being tortured by the technos. So I kind of get why she's turned on them.
Sounds familiar.
Well, see, that's the reason why this doesn't work as a suspense yeah. scene.
Okay.
Okay, in season two, we didn't know May that well, but what we did know about her is that she was willing to get in the street and fight with people she didn't know to protect someone else she didn't know. She just knew they mm-hmm. were in trouble, you know? And so we were getting to know her. And when, as you said, she barely knew the Mallrats. They were just the people who adopted her, and she thought she was lucky until they basically delivered her into the hands of the Chosen, and she's like, okay, maybe these guys don't know what they're doing. But there's still some suspense as to how far she'll go to betray them, how she's towing the line, because we don't know that much about her yet, you know? And so it still has an emotional effect on you. Not to mention, she felt like her life was physically in danger with these guys, and she had good reason to feel that way. Okay, so this time, though, we've seen the way she's been treated all since she returned in season four, and she clearly has not had a place in the mall. She doesn't feel like a part of the team. They've made her wibbly-wobbly from one scene to the next, where one, she's a team player, and the next, she's, like, denouncing whatever, you know what I mean? And again, I'm not even judging her for that, but I'm like, you've shown her as not being a part of the group, being kind of screwed over by most of the group. And then you've already shown her to betray them in this current time. By trying to have Selene killed, that is a betrayal of the entire tribe already. So trying to set up this betrayal as suspenseful, it's like, no, of course she's going to do this. No one is shocked. Nobody is like, oh, I can't believe she's going to do it. Really? You can't believe? Like, come on. She's already done the worst thing you can do to the tribe. Mm-hmm. So she's going to. And there are people who wouldn't blame her for doing so. So it just doesn't work as a, oh my gosh, what's May going to do?
Oh no, so what I meant was, it makes sense for her to have done this. Not that there's any sort of jeopardy in the fact that she's going to do it. It is obvious that which way she's going to go. And also, to be honest, she's burned all of her bridges, hasn't she? Because if they find out what she's done, what is she going to do?
Oh, see, this is the thing. Like, the season two angle worked because May was just a survivor. She didn't know these people. She just wanted to eat. She wanted to live. You know what I mean? But here, for me, it doesn't work, because the worst thing that can happen is that May will leave the tribe. You know what I mean? That's the worst thing that's really going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, and like her, like, reluctance to do that, it's like, well, you've got nothing here and you don't feel part of the tribe anyway. That's the angle that's been kind of presented to us. So it's like, this isn't really the kind of gotcha thing that I don't really feel it as if this is really trapping May. It just doesn't work for me personally.
That's a good point too. I mean, what is Lance just pointed out, the worst thing that's going to happen is Meg will be like, you either work with me or I tell the Mallrats what you did. And May, who already doesn't feel like she's a part of the tribe or has a home there and resents the Mallrats, why, if you're so afraid of them, just leave.
Right.
Like, you don't have to double down on your treachery. You already tried to have Selene killed. Just leave. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have a home there. You clearly don't have an allegiance to these people. You don't care about them. Now, if they put in that May wanted to get even with the Mallrats, I think it would be a little meatier. Mm-hmm. You know, like, instead of it being a reluctance or acting like, oh my gosh, I'm backed into a corner. If he tells them, I'll lose my family. It's like, you haven't shown her as seeing these guys as her family.
Yeah, you haven't shown a single bit that she's connected. Yeah.
So it's like, the May we know would have left. Like, the May we know would have been like, you know what, screw it. I've already burnt every bridge. I believe nobody there cares about me. I tried to get my bestie murdered. There's no reason to go back. As he said, there's not a good line of like, she has to betray them because she's trying to salvage something. Like, what is she trying to salvage? If Mega was threatening her life, right, exactly. If Mega was threatening her life or something like that, then it'd be like, okay, that's why she has to do this. But she doesn't have to do this, like, at all. She could just cut her losses and go her way. You know, let these people go, because she clearly doesn't care that much about them. And she truly believes they don't care about her. And there are some who'd be like, she's got good reason to believe that. So, yeah, I don't get it either. Her doubling down as if she's out of options doesn't work either.
No, like, if they established the chaos that Ebony and her sisters are creating better, and her options were like, okay, I could stay with this tribe that, you know, is willing to let me stay with them, and I don't want them to know what I did, because, you know, this is the safest place for me, sure. But even though they keep saying, oh, it's so dangerous outside, we can't go outside alone because it's dangerous, it doesn't come across as May feeling that way.
Yeah. And even if she did, why would she believe the Mallrats were the safest place? She has firsthand experience that, if there's trouble, that they're not going to keep me safe. So,
if there's trouble, they're the first ones hit.
Right. They're going to walk right into the danger.
Especially with things like this.
Yeah.
Where do you want to be when there's trouble? In the middle of it?
And even with the so-called trouble, look how many times May has left the mall. She's been to the casino and the bars and been out in the streets. Like, I mean, it doesn't correlate. So that kind of fear is not there.
She spent days on the street looking for Pride. She's clearly not afraid of the chaos out there.
She's not afraid.
She's fine. She's used more to it. Suited.
This is where she was born. Like,
right. She is quite suited to the chaos out on the street. So yeah, none of this works out. None of it. I think they should have gone in the direction of her actually wanting vengeance on the Mallrats. You know, like, if you're already going to put her in a headspace where she's willing to try and have Celine killed, like, stay on that path of that headspace where that's how angry she is, that she's still that upset and feels betrayed by these people. I'm not saying that she's correct, but that's how she feels. Then make that her motivation to be like, yeah, you know what? He's right. You know what I mean? These guys have been jerks to me, and I'd like to see them eat dirt a little bit.
Yeah. Like, in a better headspace, she would be thrilled at the chance to work with the Technos. But, the winning team. Let's be on that.
But you can't make her someone who's a conspirator to murder and a victim. Like, I'm sorry, it's not working the way you filmed this. You know? Sorry.
Yeah. Conflicting directions.
Even if you would not have known May, like, if you had no knowledge of seasons 1 to 4, you would still know that...
Right, all you know of her is in season 5, she was willing to have Celine murdered.
That's like, okay, but you already wanted to get Celine murdered. Why is it you want to stay with these people so bad?
Honestly, you'd think the mall would be the last place she'd want to be after all of that. Mm. You know? Like, I tried to have her killed, and instead I lost the man I loved who didn't love me and made sure I knew that with his dying breath. Why would you want to be in the mall?
Right.
And the most frustrating thing about this as well is that there is another location that we can move May to. So we could have her leave the mall and then have her end up in Liberty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they need her to spy. So
some reason, yeah.
It's so boring.
Especially when Mega proves later that he didn't really need her to do any spying. So
of course not.
He's just playing with her. And I mean, Mega does seem to come across as someone who did his homework. So, you know, he might have known about May's past.
I mean, we saw him in the early episode come and confront May in the mall. Like, so you didn't even need her, really. Like, this is, you could have done this all on your own.
They just needed to find something for her to do.
Right, so. Yeah, that's what it feels like, unfortunately.
I mean, even if they had tried to do a situation like they had when she was with the Chosen, where she's like She's a double agent, isn't she, at point?
Mm-hmm.
So even if we had a situation where she was trying to become a double agent again, and they just, she couldn't find anybody in the mall to listen to her, it would have been A, kind of funny, but also not, do you know what I mean? It would have at least been something, but this scene is just a nothing scene. It doesn't advance anything on, and it's boring. This episode is really boring. Even though some good stuff happens in it, it's just like, oh my god.
It's like, the only reason I can think of for Mega to have done this is that in case something goes wrong, he can still get away, like, with you know, a clean slate, with a, no, I didn't do anything, it was me.
Well, yeah, that's obviously what he's going to do, isn't it? Because, like, he can turn around and say, yeah, but she did all this stuff.
Come on, the Marts are dumb, but they're not that. They're never going to believe that May is the mastermind behind all those over men.
No, I didn't mean that. No, sorry. I should have been clear. What I meant was, he can turn around and say about the Celine Pride situation. That's what he can turn around and say. Well, if she says,
but she can then go around and say, well, Meg is behind everything.
Yeah, but she's a liar. Who got one of their friends killed and tried to get the other one killed. I mean,
come on,
the thing is,
are dumb,
at this
but they're
point,
not that dumb. They're going to realize, yeah, Meg has got the power. They are dumb,
are
but come
they
on,
not?
If that confrontation happened in real time, the levels, come on, they are dumb, but they're not that dumb. They're like, okay, Meg.
I'm not sure.
No, come
let's
on.
No. Let's be honest. The mall rats are only as dumb as the story needs them to be at any given time.
The Mallrats might not be that dumb, but Jay.
Yeah, I mean,
oh well, Jay.
If that conversation happened, come on.
If the story needed it to happen, that's exactly how they would write it, and you know
exactly.
It, man. You know that
the Mallrats wouldn't believe that May said Megan was behind everything. I don't think May would be like no.
No, if they wanted the story to go that way, that's how they would write the Mallrats. 100%.
And I wasn't saying that Mega would say that May was behind his operation.
No, you know, the pride stuff. That, but I'm saying yeah. She could turn around and say, well, Mega's behind everything, the holograms, everything. Like, you mean that she has that actual leverage? If he spills that beans, she has that actual leverage. And I don't think much dismiss that over the pride thing.
I don't know.
No, I can't believe that. They would just
because a lot
that.
Of them don't believe that. You know, now they've started to disbelieve that Zoot is dead. When a lot of them went to the funeral. I mean, come on!
No, even that, no. May isn't technologically inclined. They would not believe for a second, not even the stupidest mall rats believe that May was actually behind it and not Mega.
No, they shouldn't. I'm just saying that these writers, if that's what they wanted the story to do, that's exactly
they
how
could
they
try, them. But it wouldn't work.
And no, we don't feel
my
like,
point is,
what?
Would that claim that May
but
was
my
working
point
in Java?
Again is that that wasn't what I was saying. What I was saying is that he could easily turn around and just say she's lying about all this stuff because I found out from Stat that
she's trying to discredit me because I know this.
Exactly.
Yeah, but then she could turn.
Like
I said, she can straight away turn around and say, "Well, Mega's behind all the holograms of Zoot." That's what I mentioned.
But Mega could have said it was Stat, couldn't he? Let's be honest, or Ram, or anyone.
Yeah,
you know, they aren't that dumb. Sorry, I will defend the Morats here. They're not that dumb.
No, I think what. I think this is what Tamsin's trying to say, and Sabine summed it up too. It's not that Mega would be like, oh, May is the one who's behind all of this. What they're saying is that Mega would discredit anything May could use against him by saying she's making it up because he found out information about her. He wouldn't like say, oh, she's behind the Zoot stuff. No. She's working with Java. He would say, I don't believe her. She's only lying about me because I found out something about her. I think that's what they're trying to point out, that's what Mega could do to discredit any information May might try to give the Mallrats in a moment of conscience, you know, where she's like, look, I need to tell you guys something. Mega's doing all this stuff. And then they would confront Mega and he'd be like, absolutely not. Why would you? Oh, you want to know why? why she's lying about me, because I found out that she tried to have Celine killed, and she's trying to get me out of the way because I know this about her.
I noticed, and I wanted to tell you guys, but...
I was giving her a chance, but I didn't know she'd betray me by lying about me and saying this. That's what I think Tamsin's trying to say, Mega.
Yeah, that's basically the information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To discredit anything May knows about him.
Yes.
And you know he would have.
Yeah, of course he would have. I mean, it's like how he's going to pin... I mean, he's going to pin it on Java, isn't he? Really, if he can. If things go wrong, he's got a scapegoat there. You know, if May tries to out him, he's got a scapegoat there. She's a liar, like Liz said.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's trying to make sure that he can keep this going for as long as possible.
Create enough reasonable doubt.
Yes.
Like, you guys know Java got away. She ran off with Ebony. You know Ebony's history. She's the crazy person seeing Zoot. You've heard the rumors. Yeah. She married him, you know. And I know this about May, and here's the proof that she did this.
And yeah. who do you think made sure Java got away? I mean, who got rid of the eco at the door?
Yes.
And you withheld this information this long because...
I was because trying to give her a chance, man.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
You said she was going to come.
I'm not buying.
And let's also say there's another reason to withhold the information is that she is still a mole rat and he isn't. He's a techno.
Yeah.
So if he was to... Yeah, exactly. Huh? Yeah.
What was that?
Sabine said no one would believe him. Yeah.
He was like, I kept it back because I didn't think you guys would believe me because I'm a techno and she's one of you, you know? Yeah. And she begged me not to say anything. She said it was a moment of weakness. She said it was a misunderstanding with Stat. So I gave her a chance.
Come on, guys.
She said she would tell you, she wanted to tell you herself.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm not saying whether or not the Mallrats would believe that. I'm simply saying that that would be a logical path for Mega to take.
And it also depends on which Mallrats are around at that moment in time. If it's Jay and Trudy, anything's getting past them right now.
And whoever decides to write these characters. Because at the end of the day, again, I reiterate, these characters will always be as dumb as the writers want them to be for the story. And they've proven it time and time again. It's not that they should be that dumb. It's that the writers will make them that dumb because that's what the story they've decided to tell needs to happen. So if they want the Mallrats to be dumb enough to believe what Meg is saying, they will simply write it and we will be aghast and have discussion with them, you know what I mean? We'd be like, how could they be so stupid? They're not that stupid. But the story writers will be like, yes, they are today.
Today they are. They drank the stupid juice.
After her early attempts to dig out gossip on the results in hitting a raw nerve of Trudy and being snapped at, Gail gets her revenge by helping Sammy to dress up as Zoot, apparently the coolest person he knows, in order to prank Trudy. Coming face to face with miniature Zoot traumatizes Trudy, though she soon forgives the pair. Following on from this incident, Trudy tells Jay everything. That Brady is Zoot's daughter, her part with the Chosen, why she's so scared for Brady's future, and why she's been forced to be on her own. So yeah, panel, I know you've got a lot of opinions on this. What do you make about Gail's impact on the mall and your reaction to the Trudy and Jay discussion?
I have one question. Okay. This is the problem. This is the problem with not establishing what these people talk about and what is common knowledge to everybody. Because we just had, one or two episodes ago where Jay knew nothing about Brady's father. He didn't know about the connection Trudy and Brady had to Bray. He had no idea about the Chosen, nothing. So that insinuates that they don't talk about this freely in the mall. It's Trudy's past, it's her personal business, and this is not gossip in the mall. And that's why Jay doesn't know anything, because he's not interested in anything that doesn't serve him. Okay, so how do you explain Gail being in the mall for 24 hours and talking like this is what people discuss at breakfast? How does she know that Trudy has a relationship with Zoot? And that, you know, like, how did she, because now Gail, knowing this, insinuates that everybody is talking about this because she hasn't been here that long. She's not friends with anybody. I do not believe Jack would share that information with her. I don't believe Lex would share that information with her. So how does Gail know when Jay has literally been with the Mallrats since mid-season 4 and didn't know this information?
All I can think that it is because Gail keeps going on about rumors she heard about the mole rat.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's somewhere along there, but also she didn't think too much about Zoot either. So none of it kind of tracks. It's a mess, is what we're basically trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
This is a mess.
It feels like, again, just a way to keep Jay oblivious of anything he's done, anything he's involved in. For me, it just feels like that kind of way.
But also, it's this really, really clunky means to an end where we have Sammy dressing up as Zoot so that Trudy can freak out and then tell Jay about everything. It's like, come on. There must have been an easier way to do this.
Okay. I know Trudy's in a certain headspace, but to believe that Sammy was Zoot. I know she's been having nightmares. I know all the chanting must be having an effect on her. But come on, Sammy.
This is right up there with Celine spoiling the Mallrats trying to sneak into the mall to save everybody in season two, and her response is so over the top. You're like, what? Are you friggin' serious? And it's all because they want the rescue to fail. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's just, and we all argued that her reaction, it doesn't matter that she thought Bray was dead. That reaction was over the top, you know, and it was just so that the rescue could fail, you know, and this, I agree with Tamsin. This is clunky. It's too over the top of a reaction for Trudy. I completely expect her to be startled to see someone in the mall dressed as Zoot. You know, the kind where you're like, you might throw a potholder at somebody. Like, what the frick, you know? But to scream and like crash out the way she does, like she truly believed that Sammy was Zoot.
Mm-hmm.
It's too over the top. And it's, again, it only serves a purpose so she can have that conversation with Jay. And it was like, there had to be a better way to get there.
Yes, but we don't know what kind of brainwashing that poor girl went through.
Oh, stop it, Sabine.
No. My word. But like her screaming at first, sure. And she forgives them for being... Yeah.
She went off on them. She went completely off on them.
Sabine, we're not attacking Trudy. We're attacking the writing of the writing,
yeah.
You don't have to defend her here, okay?
So I'm like, on one side, yeah, she's definitely overreacting, but seeing someone dressed up as your dead ex might not be the best thing to see.
And we agree with that. We're talking about the overreaction to it, and we know why it's there. Come on, Sabine, stop. Stop it. We're not even attacking Trudy for having a reaction. We're talking about the way they wrote this reaction and why they wrote this reaction. You don't have to defend her, Sabine. We're not attacking Trudy.
And yeah, this is all information that Jay should know. Jay should have known this from the start, but he knows nothing.
Jay should have known this before they entered the city. But
right. Absolutely.
Yeah, because wasn't it the Guardian that told Lex about the technique?
Yep. Actually,
I'm not allowed. I was told I wasn't allowed to bring that up anymore.
Because we all know it was BS. We all know. They wrote that line before they even decided what it meant. Before they'd even decided what season four was going to be and that the technos would exist. You know it. Stop.
The technos is one thing, but season five is another.
I would have liked a more subtle version of the scene. Like, everything can still happen. Trudy can still be startled, upset, irritated, and pissed off that the kids played this prank. Jay could hear about it, and they could still have the conversation. It's just the way they decided to direct it and write it. I'm just like, this was unnecessary. And I feel like it's once again playing on a hysterical Trudy trope that I'm tired of seeing. And again, there was a more subtle way to have all the same beats of these scenes and get us to where they want us to be.
Yeah.
The only place this got me is to being annoyed at Gail for existing.
I hated her acting choices in these scenes. They felt so unnatural.
Yeah.
It's like, on it. As a character, you know, Yeah, you're annoyed that he won't give you the info, but you know there's some kind of history between Trudy and Zoot, so you sent someone dressed up as him?
Okay, can we talk about that, please?
How the heck is that? Like, you're trying to get along with these mole rats. You want to become one. You want to be a part of this group. And this is your choice of what you're doing? This is your idea of a friend at that age?
In her mild defense, Sammy is literally the one who picked Zoot, which is the problem. Because why would Zoot be the coolest person Sammy knows?
Because right now in this city, everyone's chanting Zoot, Zoot, Zoot.
I say this felt spiteful to me. I don't understand because this is how you're showing us a girl, and I don't get it. Because like, she knew of the connection, of a big important connection between Trudy and Zoot. And yeah, Sammy chose Zoot for whatever ridiculous reason, but Gail knew this and went along with it in order to get back at Trudy. So like, you've just come, girl, and you're this spiteful.
It's like, yes, she could have helped Sammy look like Zoot for a moment, but to instantly send him to torment Trudy.
Yeah, she knew.
That's just mean.
And it felt, again, like, to go back to, you know, Tamsin, this is such a clunky way to get to the point, which is a conversation where Trudy confesses all this to Jay. And it's like, oh, let's give the kids something stupid to do. Really, really freaking stupid to do. And at this point, I'm like, Sammy and Gel are like MVPs of one of the most useless characters. I reached a point, like, I was hanging on. Sammy was just there. I get why no one cares about him. Didn't care that the kid was spiraling in his addiction. I get it. I totally do. But at this point, it's like, I hate him. You know what I mean? And he started off pretty promising. But I hate him at this point. And I'm just like, oh, the scene is so freaking stupid. Almost every scene with him and Gel is going to be so stupid.
As for the conversation with Jay, I guess this was the best they could come up with a, oh, Brady, hear that? He called you a thing. But I just hate the whole conversation. I hate the whole trying to shove Trudy and Jay together, but I'll always hate everything about that.
In their own love story, I think it's fine. Like, again, if Trudy and Jay were endgame, and this was leading to them finding their understanding and growth towards each other, then this is a conversation that needs to be had. You know, you're sharing your vulnerabilities, you're sharing your weaknesses, you're sharing where you failed or you feel you failed and what you're trying to make up for. That would work. Of course, it's not, unfortunately. And that's why in hindsight, it's like, this sucks so much. I don't have a problem with the conversation too much, you know, Trudy sharing these vulnerabilities and what she's been through and that making Jay feel closer to her, because it's like, oh, we actually have something in common. This is a girl that I have seen as having this spotless reputation, and she's so kind and she's so nice, and I'm learning that she too found herself in a really compromising situation like me. Wow, that makes me feel better about myself. It's right in his wheelhouse. But his reaction when she told her he was like, no.
You? Again, really?
It was so over the top. Again, it was the delivery, like the way he said it. And it's like, Jay, could you possibly be more clueless to anything happening with these people you chose to join? It was such a... It took me out of the moment because it was just played too hard. And she's like, you know, she tells him, you know, Zoot's Brady's father. And he's just like, no. Man. Oh, my gosh. I did like hearing Trudy verbalize again, like where she is and how she is, how she, because it's nice to get check-ins on how Trudy's processing what happened in the past. And you see her progression of her understanding of her own past behavior. And I do, I'll always appreciate that. It's part of character growth, you know? And every time we revisit things that we've done with the new knowledge we've gained, we may see it differently and stuff like that. So I appreciated that.
All I can think though, is this scene for people who came in on season 4 and so don't know about the relationship between Zoot, Trudy, and Brady. because it was never really brought up in season four, because why would it be? And we know that there were a lot of people that jumped on to the series in season four. And so is that what this is all about? Just reminding and letting people know that this is the dynamic for Trudy.
It's like they realized, oh, wow, all our new viewers have no idea what Trudy's connection to all of this is.
Yeah.
Why is she so upset? What's wrong with her? We better write a scene where she spells it out for them.
I wonder if they read that on the iBoards.
It's possible.
With scripts changing daily during filming.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the episode, Jack is explaining his theory, you know, about what he's thinking is causing all of this. And they reference the turbine, but they don't do it accurately. Because, again, it's just there for new audiences who have no idea what the lore is. And so, yeah, they do lazy little callbacks to fill you in on information. Mm-hmm. They don't do it right. And I hate that they don't do it right. It pisses me off. Because it's like, the turbine worked. Okay, this discussion is stupid. It worked. Yeah, the first prototype didn't. But that's why you guys had what you had in the mall for so long. Because the turbine worked.
And the turbine didn't work because of you, Lex.
This conversation where he's using the turbine as an example of Jack's ideas being silly and not working out. And I'm like, but the turbine did work. What are you talking about? But this is, again, just for new audiences.
Yeah.
They're making it stupid simple.
So, yeah, maybe that's what this conversation's about, to catch up new viewers on Trudy's lore. And they realized, oh, yeah, they have no idea what's going on with her.
But why should she be panicking?
Right, exactly.
Oh, someone reminded us that she should be panicking about this. And why isn't Trudy responding to this?
And we should probably explain why. She's been having nightmares and blah, blah, blah.
Meanwhile, Mega and Java meet up at Lex's love shack to trade information on their unfolding plan. Though Mega is annoyed at her for going rogue with Ebony's wedding to Zoot, he continues to help her side of the arrangement by providing her a headset, especially since he needs her help in scaring off Jack. Turncoat May has already fed back to Mega that Jack is getting close to uncovering the truth about the holograms of Zoot. So, your panel, what do you make of Java and Mega's alliance?
I was really, really, really concerned when Java started talking about Lex's love nest. And she was talking about how, you know, Lex brought Siva there. And all I could think was, that's your sister. This is gross.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else get the ick?
I'm just confused about, okay, so Java hasn't had a headset this whole time to keep Ebony's delusions going. You're telling me that that fatal dose that she apparently gave her in an alleyway back in season four has lasted this whole time? It seems weird to me that her delusions are evolving on their own, apparently through Wi-Fi, and it's only now
exactly as she wants
that she's getting a headset to continue. This whole plot line is so dumb. Like, she should have had a headset the whole time.
Yeah.
To make sure she was topping off Ebony.
I genuinely thought that's what was happening in the background, but apparently not.
I could have understood if Ebony was wearing a headset during the whole, oh, I'm marrying Zoot thing, you know?
Yeah.
I could have accepted that, but...
Because you're suggesting this is one heck of a dose of paradise that we've never seen before that's working on Ebony and has been working on her for weeks after one dose.
Weeks,
and she hasn't had a moment of clarity. In fact, it just got worse and worse and worse. Like, this is crazy. You didn't even show Ram being this good at what he was doing, you know? And that's what we're meant to believe this whole time. Again, because they never really clarify when she got hit with the first dose, and we've just had to guess, you know, and I agree with Lance, it had to have happened in that stupid alleyway, even if it don't make sense, it's the only time it could have happened, and it, like, this is what, you haven't had to top it off, are you kidding me, this whole time?
This is like the whole kids don't do drugs kind of thing.
This is crazy.
It's like, this is what happens when you do when you do paradise.
Like all the rest of the evidence has shown that people need to be topped off. And mm-hmm. This doesn't make any sense that her delusions have lasted this long without an extra dose of paradise to keep it along. And again, you're telling us this programmed paradise is literally evolving.
Is this their way of explaining how insane Pride went?
Oh, but don't even go there.
No, because he was getting repetitive doses over and over again. That's what they were saying with Pride. He kept going back into the machine. Mm-hmm. And that's what was making him crazy. It was about addiction. Same with Sammy. Same with all the kids in the city. What's happening with Ebony doesn't make a lick of sense.
This is what happens when you stay in it too long, people. Beware.
It's like, okay, she was in it for 20 seconds in an alleyway.
It's even worse.
And it's lasted for weeks. And again, it's just getting stronger because he wrote it that way. Like, come on.
Yeah, every thread of this just gets worse because it's lasted for weeks. It apparently, running for 20 seconds, and it's gone worse. It's not like it's faded away. It's getting worse. It's evolving even worse. She's seen it everywhere now. I was like, how?
Did they use the original version where, you know, the one that made Ram think he could fly?
I mean, I think the thing is, if we're having to explain it like this, it's just not working. Because they haven't done a good enough job of explaining it to us.
But we're supposed to be dumber, so.
But I mean, how stupid are we meant to be, Sabine?
Mega, think about it. Mega is
at the level of an 8-year-old.
This makes it worse. Mega clearly didn't plan for Ebony to marry Zoot. So you're telling me your paradise dose has gone rogue? What the frick is happening here? It's not Java didn't suggest getting married to Zoot to Ebony. Now, if she'd had a helmet the whole time, then you would be able to explain away that Java is the one interfering with the original dose that, you know, Mega gave her and what his ideal plan was. And then Java's been tweaking it because she just likes messing with her sister. But he didn't plan for Zoot to get married to Ebony, and he's shocked that that happened. And it's like, you're the one who gave her the original dose and literally apparently programmed it to say the right things at the right time and prey on her insecurities, and you're shocked it married her? Who wrote this crap?
I need you guys to explain this to me, because I am confused now. Was the original dose meant to incapacitate Ebony or to include her in this chaos? I'm confused.
Right, at this point, it's like, what was the original dose point?
It doesn't make sense. None of it makes sense.
Because he's shocked that she's going off the deep end. He feels she's going too far. It's like, you gave her the dose. What was the objective of it?
Clearly not this.
I'm so confused, yeah.
I mean, he's happy with the fact that the sisters have run off and are causing chaos. So you're like, okay, I guess that was the plan. You thought that if Ebony started seeing Zoot, she'd go down the crazy rabbit hole. Okay, but it's going too far and you're surprised. This is the dumbest crap ever. And it will just keep getting dumber.
I know what the plan was, right? I've worked it out. It was all just an excuse. They didn't care how they got there. It was just they wanted to bring Zoot back by any means possible. It was just an excuse. They don't care how they do it. And that's the problem, because they've put so little care into the how. How do you get him back? How do you get these solutions? How is Ebony involved? How is Meg involved? How is Java involved? Why does Ram later go on to do what he does? How? They're only interested in the Zoot of it all.
But for me, it's like, Mega wants the city to be afraid. And I get that, you know, from what he's learned about this city. Okay, who was the bad guy? Well, Zoot was the bad guy. You know, let's make them afraid of that. But this whole thing has me wondering if he just wanted Ebony to be out of the way for that, because he knew otherwise Ebony would start leading them.
Also, it does seem very careless of Mega to, if he's already concerned about the direction Ebony's madness is taking her, why would you give Java a headset?
To correct it?
To make it, that makes it seem worse.
You know she hates her sister. You can't believe that anything good's going to come from this, especially since you're chastising her for letting the wedding happen. She's supposed to be holding the leash on what Ebony's doing. That seems to be their arrangement, you know? And like, so why would you give her a headset? And also, how long is the dose, the original dose, supposed to even last? Does it never wear off? Like, what the frick is happening here?
Is it just supposed to change her memories or something?
Like, they don't care. Season 5 does not care.
No, they don't care.
Zoot back at any cost.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how.
We just want the public scared.
Wow. I don't get, like, please explain to me the allure of Zoot and why that character has had such a chokehold on this whole series, the whole thing from season 1 to now, because I just don't get it. I don't see what the writers are seeing in his character.
It's from Ray.
I think it would have been better if they brought the Guardian back, to be honest.
He was disappointed how quickly he actually killed off Zoot, and it's haunted him since, and this is why it's been threaded throughout the whole 5 series, because he realized the mistake. He's tried to bring him back in many different ways, but yeah, this is why.
This shows, though, that he did the right thing by killing him off, because can you imagine if Zoot had been alive and made it into season 5? I mean, what the hell would that version of Zoot look like? God.
Domestic?
Really? Do you really think that?
No.
There are so many better characters that have terrorized the city that Mega could have fallen back on, you know, and this is just like eulogizing Pride and Celine's love story. You know, you mythologize Zoot and you make him bigger than he actually was. And it seems to me that the Chosen did a better job of terrorizing the city. And Jaffa, nobody knows what happened to him. Like, it would make way more sense to bring him back, you know?
I mean, the other thing is, Mega can use the fact that we have no idea what happened to Ram. Like, they have no idea where he is. Is he alive? Is he dead? Is he working with his ex-wives, Java and Ebony? Is this one overarching plan that he's pulling the strings on? Is that what it is, right? And the thing is, that is something that you could lean into. The fact that the assumption would be it is Ram. He is pulling the strings.
That would have been hilarious.
You don't need to bring anyone back for this.
It would have been hilarious though if it had been Ram all along.
Well, it's so annoying. It's so weird. It's so weird. I hate it.
Yeah. At this point, nobody wanted Zoot back, but we got him.
I feel like it ruined Zoot, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because what they did with him with the Chosen was so interesting, because it was really clear that Zoot didn't have any role in this. Zoot was actually dead. And it was a great analogy for these kind of cults who take people's names and they say, this is the world. And it's just, this is what Jaffa wanted to make the world, right? And he used Zoot as a way to achieve those things. But it was really clear that Zoot himself was still dead. So, and it was used in a really interesting way. But this is just, like you say, this just ruins his character.
Get in line, Zoot. There are a lot of characters that get ruined. So, I mean, he's just one in the bucket. Being dead doesn't even save you from your character being ruined.
God, yeah.
An early exit from the show doesn't save you from having your character ruined. That's wild. This
makes me feel bad for the actor.
Well, he was getting paid, though, so I'm sure that was fine.
He's like, I'll tap dance for you, whatever. And hey, I respect it. Get your coin, dude. I mean, it's not like it's the worst part. I mean, at this point, it's nothing that can save the show. So, like, I can understand the actors being like, whatever. Like, who cares? I don't care what you've asked me to do. I'll do it. I'm paying for college, man.
All right, let's make a brief stop at Liberty. So, searching hospitals for more advanced computer parts for Ram, Slade also finds a pair of crutches, but then runs into Ebony and the Zootists. After stubbornly refusing to submit to Zoot, he is taken to the zoo as a slave. But Ebony's interest in him is piqued by his flirtatious banter. When he uses his crutches to escape, she lets him go, telling Siva that they will meet again. So yeah, just kind of briefly, what did you make of Ebony and Slade's first meeting?
It was quite hot.
I know, I'm like, I'm sorry, Slade Ruby Shippers. She never stood a chance because nope. He meets a woman who legit just threatened to feed him to lions. And he was like, that's hot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I love how she's basically she's ready to let go of Zoot the minute this interaction takes place. She's like, Zoot who? Oh yeah, I need the power.
I know, I'm like, what was she inferring when she's like talking about taking him into slavery and that he, like the things she's saying are very sexual innuendos. And I was like, you're married. What is happening here?
Zoot knows she has needs.
Yeah, no, this whole scene was a bit weird for me. I'm not going to lie. from the start, with the whole, yeah, okay, we're elevating only women to positions of power. Oh, Zoot's different. And then the whole sexual innuendo with Slade. I don't know. It felt weird.
It's like if Ram can have multiple women, Ebony can have multiple men or toys, I guess.
This is what makes the whole paradise that she has confusing. Because it's like, again, Mega, what was the goal here? Your paradise is becoming artificial intelligence at this point, which, of course, that's where the show is going. Right? It's like, this doesn't make sense. I don't understand a lot of the reasoning. Like, where is this paradise supposed to lead her? You know? And, I mean, I actually do understand the woman in power part, because when you go back to when she was by Zoot's side in season one, running the Locos, she was forced into a position where to be in a be with power, she had to defer to this guy because this is who everybody listened to. But we notice how different things are as soon as she takes over. She didn't really care for Zoot's ideas. She was just like, I'm going to use him so I can lead this pack the way I want to. She changes up the Locos and everything, the power system, the dynamics, everything. In some ways, Zoot was a more egalitarian leader than Ebony was. Because she was like, I'm going to live like a pharaoh. But Zoot's like, I'm going to be like a round table with my people in a train yard, slumming it, you know? So I kind of get.
This is why this doesn't work.
But that's what I'm saying. I think it kind of works since she admits it's her idea, because Siva calls her on it. She actually asks her and she's like, was that Zoot's idea? You know, the whole women being in power and being the only ones in positions of power. And Ebony's like, no, it was my idea. And so I feel like that's like a glimpse of, you know, Ebony, like the real Ebony.
Yeah, but for me, like, if we're going back, if we're taking her back to Zoot's here, he's here, then, and her relationship with Zoot back when how it used to be, then she wouldn't be suggesting this. This is why it doesn't work for me. Because, like, you're taking it back to when Ebony was in power of the Locos, not when Zoot was there. You know, if you see what I mean? So yeah, it's like, when Zoot these ideas there, aren't Zoot's. It wouldn't have come from Zoot. So why are we presenting it like it's okay, even though Zoot's here? You know what I mean? I don't know.
Well, none of these ideas are Zoot's, because he was think about it. Mega is writing an artificial person based on anecdotes he's hearing from other people. He didn't know him. You know what I mean? And it's like, so it does in some small way make sense that he's not at all accurate to the real Zoot. I mean, it wasn't Zoot. Zoot wouldn't have married Ebony.
No, I mean, but from Ebony's point of view, why is she suggesting this, knowing Zoot? That's why I'm confused.
Because she's crazy, apparently. Nothing makes sense here, Lance.
Well, right now, at this point, I would have actually appreciated if Ram had already been able to mess with computers and had been interrupting the Bloody Paradise program they're running on Ebony. That I would have accepted, but this is just bad insane.
And the fact is, we're going to get that later on. We're going to get memory messing about and rewriting and wiping and stuff later on. It's like, let me stop thinking about this. It's just
This is very Jason Goes to Space from the Friday the 13th series. You know what I mean? Like, at that point, just throw in the towel and enjoy the ride, because they don't care anymore. They don't give a crap. This whole season is just jingled keys. Like, if that was the soundtrack, it would just be your key ring constantly going, you know? And that's, like, yeah, the saddest thing. As much as I hate season four, I spent a whole year exclaiming how much I hate season four. The one thing I've always been able to admit, season four was trying. It was trying. Like, there was effort there. I'm not saying that they didn't succeed, but they were trying. You know what I mean?
But at least it wasn't season five.
Season five just, I mean, sometimes that's what makes it more fun.
But... yeah. It's a wide ride.
It's like cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Season five has got to be one of the worst fan fictions I've ever watched.
It is. It's crazy. You think about everything that happens.
It has all of the elements of a terrible fan fiction. Every single one.
It really does.
Everything.
But I will add in, I will add into this the specter of having read the season six synopsis of what was going to happen. And I'm going to say, season five made a lot of sense compared to where they were going with season six.
You know, it's tradition now. Isn't that crazy that it's tradition with every new season? We go through the season, we critique it, we pull it apart, you know what I mean? And yet, and we get tired of it sometimes, you know, by the end of season three, we're like, we hate our lives, like, please just end. And then you get to season four and you're like, well, at least season three did this. And it's a tradition now, no matter what. Yeah. We're always going to be like, well, at least the last season that was a pile of garbage was a decent pile of garbage. It didn't smell as bad, you know, or whatever.
We will end up saying that once we get to the books.
How does a series just get worse and worse and worse? I mean, even series...
with effort.
Like... I think about long-running TV shows and people complain about seasons and stuff. But, I mean, how often does one just get worse and worse and worse and worse? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. I mean, that is a good question. I mean, usually you get a ropey final season or, you know, we think about things like Game of Thrones and stuff like that. And that it had started to decrease in quality at a point. But the downgrade, that we hit that downgrade so quickly in the tribe.
It's so weird.
It falls off so fast.
Like, you hear people complain about The Walking Dead. Now, I don't watch the show, so I can't speak to it from personal experience, but I do listen to people talk about it because I love zombies. So anyway, and what I always get from people who enjoy The Walking Dead or stop watching The Walking Dead, they all can say the same thing. There are good seasons and there are bad seasons. There are slumps. And then they'll pull something great out and you'll be like, oh no, that was a stellar season. And so like the whole run of the show is, it's kind of a mixed bag, but there's no like, oh, it just every season just became a pile of garbage. And then the next pile of garbage was worse because that one had your decomposing grandma in it. But then the next one after that had cannibalism. You know what I mean? Like it just like the tribe deserves an award because it's like, it was only five seasons. How did you do this? How did you do this? This downslide is memorable.
Well, it goes back to there being too many episodes. Let's be honest. That is what the problem really is here. There are 52 episodes, which, you know, it's an entire year of episodes, isn't it, really? And it's too much. So you can see that they run out of material really quickly. It's really clear in season three, where they run out of rage with the Chosen, and then we have that baggy end that just goes on forever and ever until they've got really no plot, and then suddenly they're like, oh, in the last three episodes, Ebony's going to take over the city. And it's like, that's the problem. There's too many episodes.
Yeah, but these two meeting. Instant fire, but weird. It's very weird. Mm. I mean, I'm a Ebony Slade shipper, so I'll take it. But
yeah,
there's no denying this is a same very here. Weird scene. And I'm like, so we're talking. You're Ebony again. You're married. You're devoted to Zoot. But the minute you saw this guy, you were like, sexual slavery. He's coming back with me. Is Zoot okay with that? Like, what is happening here? What is happening to her psyche? Which will, of course, be cured very quickly and easily. Because this kind of brain damage, I'm sorry, isn't going to be cured so easily. Like, this is insane what they're doing with her and how they're going to hand wave it away. I mean, nothing's going to top, like, you know, Ram. Nothing's stopping that, but this is pretty crazy where they're going to take her and then she'll be fine. Like, she'll be totally fine.
It wasn't just my dirty mind, yeah? When she said, oh, we can find something for him to do where he doesn't move back.
No, it was...
She was talking about that.
I was like,
wait, what? Did she just suggest what I think she suggested? You just met. Like, wow.
Like, her suggesting something like this to someone like Bray, sure. But...
And again, it's not that I don't think Ebony wouldn't suggest something like that to a guy she found attractive. It's that you've been building up this devotion to Zoot. That's what I don't get. Like, you're building up this devotion to Zoot, and then in the next scene, she's willing to take this guy in as her sex slave because he's hot, and she finds his banter fun. You know what I mean? Like, wait, what? How devoted is she to Zoot? Like, what is happening here? Mega, what freaking paradise program did you write? What is happening?
Well, it's definitely some form of paradise.
It's the Slade effect. He's cutting through the programming already. He's kidding.
It's like Bray and Lex all rolled into one whole package.
Yeah, just like he suddenly runs Liberty. It's just the Slade effect. He's just, as soon as you see him.
Here comes the swallower.
Is it just me, but I also really like the fact that with the crutches, I love the fact that Ram's actually in this scene, even though he's not in this scene, because with the crutches, they are intended for Ram, and you've got this whole scene between Ebony and Steve and Slade, and Ram's crutches are there, and it's like, it's right in front of you, hun, but obviously you're not going to get it, because who the hell would, you know?
Yeah, nobody should. He was dying and paralyzed. No one in the right mind would make that connection.
But I just love the fact that, you know, without being in the scene, he's technically in the scene.
Oh, my word.
With the crutches. I love that.
It's the Slade effect, man. Gosh, it even works on Ram. That is crazy work.
Oh, well, I mean, it was going to work on him, wasn't it? Let's be honest.
Everybody falls in love with Slade, even Daryl.
Oh, yeah.
Slade made Daryl have a sexual awakening. He was like, I've been chasing girls this whole time.
That expertly brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. In investigating the building that Jack believes to be the source of the Zoot holograms, he's separated from Jay and Lex when they are attacked by the Zootis and grabbed by Zoot himself. So, panel, what did you make of Meg's attempt to scare Jack off?
So, I was kind of talking about this earlier, but I just want to pick this up again. So all I want to say is we're going on a ghost hunt, right? We're going to this place that I think Slade went to as well. I think that's maybe where he got the stuff for Ram. But anyway, skipping past that. So we're going to this place to find these projectors, okay? But at no point does Jay think, hang on, wait, Java is not capable of setting something like this up. It maybe I should think about Mega a little bit more than I do at the moment. It feels so, I don't know. Like, even if they get this evidence, who's going to believe them? Where are they going to take it? What are they going to do with it? They're just going to take one projector away so that they can't make a hologram anymore. Just please help me.
I just don't know why our mall rat, this is what I don't get. And it's spring launching off of what you've just said, it doesn't make sense to me that any logical person in this city who doesn't believe that Zoot has come back from the dead, like, you're going to have your crazies who believe it. Okay, fine. But then you have the other part of the population who don't believe for a second that Zoot has come back from the dead. So how are people seeing him? You're either going to think people are dressing like him, or you're going to think, gee, could it be the outfit that invaded our city and brought this kind of technology here?
Yeah.
Why has nobody considered that the technos are behind this?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It just doesn't make any sense. It just feels like it's the Zoot thing all over it. I mean, I know it's still a continuation of the Zoot thing, but as we said, it's all about how do we get Zoot back into the narrative? Not... They haven't given that any consideration, and this just feels really just. And also, I'm going to say another thing: the fact that they use the actor who plays Daryl instead of using the actor who played the original Zoot, again, it's really frustrating, because that's one of the things. Like, that guy doesn't look anything like Zoot. I don't get it. I know he's meant to be this fabulous actor, but it just, none of it makes sense. Help me.
Well, I mean, when he was, the first holograms were Danny James, mm-hmm. you know, the original actor.
Yeah.
So the first few sightings were actually him. Okay.
You know, yeah, I know that.
And then
yeah.
Mega realized, oh, I'm going to need a body double, you know, for the people who never actually saw Zoot, you know, close up. You know, wouldn't recognize him. It's been 5 years, and it's not like these kids have a photo of him, you know. And but it's just like, why haven't the mall rats considered Mega or just other technos?
This is the thing. Yeah,
because you guys just spend an entire season being shown that Ram could put words in your mouth, he could take your image, he could put it wherever he wanted. Like, Amber knows firsthand what that's what they can do, you know? And so at this point, it there should be no sense of like, the technos couldn't do that. You don't know what they can do. They showed you so many crazy things that you were shocked by of what they could do with their technology. They would be my first suspects. Immediately, as soon as people are like, we're seeing Zoot in the streets, we're seeing images of him, I'd be like, it's got to be this tech that can make you see things and be in places that aren't real. That's the only logical explanation.
Yeah, there isn't anything else. It just, you have to go through so many narrative loops that you actually make yourself look like such a moron for not working it out sooner. And it's just...
The fact it takes them so long to suspect him.
Yeah.
Blows my mind. Because again, this technology was introduced by the technos. It'd be different if this kind of, like, they explored this technology before the technos came. Then fine. You've got lots of culprits who could get their hands on this kind of stuff and do this kind of stuff. But no, this was introduced. The show became sci-fi in season 4. Okay. In their world. And again, you've got people who were all with their own eyes. Anything could be projected and you'd be made to believe it was real. That's how realistic it was. And now everybody in the city is convinced a dead kid's out walking and running a tribe. Okay. And you don't suspect this is technology.
I mean, and even then, there were ways to make this work. Like, okay, so you could have said, okay, the city didn't believe the mall rats. Because the Morats have lied before, like with the Guardian keeping him alive in secret. Like, they could have played into that. As like, yeah. Okay, so the city just do not believe that Lex killed Zoot, that the Morats were involved in that, and he was still alive. They could have played that angle, given the city some importance in this whole scenario. But instead, it's like, well,
yeah.
Everyone's stupid.
That actually made sense, you know. That's the whole Zoot lives thing that Jaffa. That Jaffa was telling everyone.
Mm-hmm. I would have liked to see some like former Chosen showing up and being like, our prophet was right. He's returned, you know, like add some personality to the crazies.
This is where I would have loved to see like this tiny glimpse of Luke hearing about this.
Because those are the people who would jump on board with hearing that Zoot's still alive. You know, and that could, you know, definitely add some to dimension.
Where are they?
Like, where are all the former Chosen kids who believed in Zoot, followed Jaffa, you know? And it's not like they just disbanded because they didn't believe it anymore. They were defeated. And there are still plenty of believers out there, I guarantee it, who would rise up at this.
And they're, like, I've spotted one of the former Chosen actually being one of the prisoners of Ebony at the moment. That all I'm thinking is, okay, it would have been nice if they had that guy, why not give a little scene where he was blabbing his mouth saying, no, that's not possible, this isn't Earlord Zoot, blah blah blah, and you know Ebony capturing because of that.
You know what would have been interesting? Okay, so the whole goal is to get Chaos on the street so that Mega can create a safe zone so that he has a place he can control. And if people want to be safe, they have to follow his rule. Okay. It doesn't, like, there's no way that the Locos could uprise, resurrect Zoot without there being another faction out there who also believed in Zoot, like I said, former Chosen, who wouldn't make a problem for the Locos. Now, that would be chaos in the streets. You've got two crazy factions with two different ideas of what Zoot is supposed to be fighting over who gets to have control over the image of Zoot. Now, that is chaos. That's a scary place. Mega Safe Zone suddenly makes way more sense in that context. Because former Chosen would rise up against Ebony's idea of Zoot and the Locos, you know, because remember, Ebony was considered blasphemous.
Yeah.
She wasn't Zoot's woman. Trudy was. The Supreme Mother was, you know. So you're going to have cultists and the original Zootists of Chaos rising up and fighting over Zoot with each other in the streets. That's what you should be seeing.
And that would have been awesome.
And then that would have actually had some meaning in the story about, like, coming full circle. And again, the mythology of a kid who tragically died at 15 years old before he got his ish together. And this is what has become of him. This is what people have made of him, you know?
And what would Bray have thought of that?
I mean, and just going back to the Zoot thing, like, what do you think of the narrative choice to have Sammy dress up as Zoot and then end it with, obviously, this unknown guy dress up as Zoot in order to attack Jack? Like, did that work for you? Or
nope.
No, it doesn't. And I also think the fact that Sammy's costume is almost pitch perfect what Zoot would have worn, even though Gail says she never saw Zoot, is another problem as well.
I love that there's so many Zoot costumes just in the city for anyone to put on.
For this one, for the Sammy one, I forgive them for that, because we had Bray dress up as Zoot with the original stuff when they were trying to overthrow the Chosen. So that could have been found in the mall somewhere. Creepy, but realistic. All the things outside, though, the patches on the back of the jackets and everything, it's, how did they get them so perfect? Were they suddenly mass-produced?
Mega was handing it out.
Do they have a printing press in the back of the school? Is that where Andy and Telly went? They had to go into professional shirt printing?
Hot Topic was having a great week.
But no, going back to your question about the book ending, so we have the fake out with Sammy so that Trudy can flip out, and then we've got the situation with at the end with Jack it's pointless. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't serve the narrative. It's just really awful. And I hate it. I hated this episode. I just hated it.
I honestly think it's worse when Daryl attacks Jack, because I only feel Daryl's double works for people who never saw Zoot's face in person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Who didn't live in a mall with his face plastered everywhere. You know, I just think the double works for the casual person on the street who avoided the locos, yeah. you know what I mean? And never really looked at right. Jack's face. It's not going to work. It doesn't work with Jack.
Well, were there actual pictures of Zoot?
How would you think it's going to work with Zack? I don't get it.
Sabine, you saw the actual pictures of Zoot. There were literally posters of him, and they were plastered all over the mall where our mall rats were imprisoned. So even if they had forgotten what Martin looked like in his death throes, okay, they were reminded, oh yeah, that's that guy's face, okay?
Right. How do you think this is going to work, Mega? Like, realistically, like... All the Morats, would know by hand what Zoot looks like.
Jack got a really good look at Zoot, okay? Because he was on burial detail, all right? He really got a good look at this kid. He had to put him out, he buried him for Pete's sake, you know? And again, even if he had maybe kind of gotten a little blurry around the edges of what Zoot looked like, he was captive in the mall where the Chosen made sure everybody knew what he looked like.
Yeah. And also, the other thing you've got to say about this. Okay, so let's take it to its logical conclusion. Right, this happens, and for some reason, Jack starts believing that he just saw Zoot. What does that mean, then? Does that mean that when we buried that guy, when we set fire to his... I can't remember how they did it. I think they set fire to his body.
The road, yeah.
That was a body... What is the point of this? Why would you pick him? It would have made more sense if it was like Sammy, who doesn't know Zoot, could be easily terrified by this situation, and it would throw him into a tailspin.
They're just completely forgetting that Jack actually saw Zoot.
Oh, I don't know, Sabine, because there are so few OG cast members now. I don't think they could have forgotten that. Maybe they have. But if they have, then it tells you the sort of attention to detail that the writers are giving the show. Because that's... I mean,
forgive Jack for being startled immediately, obviously. He just got attacked by somebody dressed as Zoot. That would scare the crap out of you. But I just don't buy what's going to happen later, where Jack is now questioning his own sanity as to, like, oh my, no, it was a real person. You know what I mean? After Jack calmed down and thought about it, his first thought would be body double.
Yeah, because the thing is, Daryl doesn't even look enough like Zoot for you to think that it isn't just a Zootist dressed up that was in the same place.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the problem. He doesn't look enough like Danny James. Doesn't even have the same bone structure in his face. Even if you're just looking at an old poster, iconography of Zoot, you're like, no, that guy wasn't him. That's not him.
And that's why if you're going to do this, it should have been Danny James who grabbed Jack in that moment. And you could have kind of got round it, where you could have had a situation where we see the scene again and Jack is there. He's looking into the face of Zoot. But is it Zoot or is it Daryl? And it switches back because he was so freaked out by being grabbed. Then he caught sight of who it was. And for a moment, he thought it was Zoot. But then he realizes, oh, hang on, I was just freaking out.
Yeah, because it's meant to show us how easily frightened Jack is.
Well, we know that already, let's be honest. Yeah. And I mean, if you were going ghost hunting, you're going to have a level of fear anyway, because you're going to try and find a ghost, which is scary, even if you don't believe in ghosts, right? So you're going to have that element. You're also surrounded by people chanting Zoot. It's a really unsafe situation. You don't know what you're walking into. And also, they'd already just been jumped.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I can... But it's like Liz says, for us to then believe that this is going to let him question everything he knows. I mean, where is Dal to slap him when we need him, you know?
Exactly. I mean, remember, Jack is a very logical person that has not changed in his personality. And I don't think that this would make him question his sanity. He'd be like, no, there's got to be an explanation as to why there was a person that I thought was Zoot. You know, I know Zoot's dead. We set him on fire and threw him in the ocean. Okay. I know he's dead, but somebody did grab me. And for a second, it looked just like him. You know, I have to. Jack would question his memory more than he would question his sanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm just like, this is really dumb. And again, if you're going to have a doppelganger who can convince people he's Zoot, pick a better doppelganger. You know, again, it makes sense that Mega wouldn't know exactly what Martin looked like and would pick. But that doppelganger shouldn't fool everybody who has seen him, seen pictures of him for years, you know, and would recognize something simple as the bone structure is wrong, man. Like, that's, Daryl doesn't look anything like Danny James. He looks as much like Zoot as Sammy did, for Pete's sake. Sammy looks more like Zoot. He just looks like a tiny, smaller version of him. But he looks more like Zoot with the bone structure Sammy has than Daryl does. Do you know what I mean? But you could play with the, like, if they were smarter, they could play with the fact that our memories are not reliable, you know? And that could have worked with Jack, where it's like, in that moment of fear, yeah, you think you saw something. It happens all the time. Eyewitnesses aren't always reliable. They prove it in a court of law all the time. People swear up and down, no, that's the guy I saw come in and rob the place, only to be proven wrong. And now they got to question their memory. And Jack is the kind of person who would question his memory first before he'd question whether Zoot had come back from the dead and grabbed him.
Yeah.
I mean, Trudy was scared when she saw Sammy dressed as Zoot in that moment of fear. And as Tamsin said, the heightened anxiety of what's going on in the city. Nobody's in their right mind. But immediately recognized, it's not Zoot. I know what Zoot looks like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Then you know it can't be.
And you know it can't be. That's the thing. You got too many people who know for this, at least these mall rats know for a fact it can't be Zoot. None of them should be questioning their sanity. They should be scared. They should be like, we don't know what's causing this, but we know it's not Zoot because we buried him. He sat for 12 hours dead on our floor.
Yeah.
Okay. We got a real good look at this kid's corpse. We know he's dead. Even if no one else believes it, we know. And as Lance said, they should have been telling people that, and then you could just have the city not believe them because the mall rats are liars. You know what I mean? It's something, but they should not believe for a second that Zoot's alive. This is a garbage episode.
The more we talked about it, the more I actually hated it.
So bad. Oh, it's just a bunch of shiny, flashy things on the screen. It went by fast. It did. Yeah. Like, it zoomed by, but shiny garbage.
Yeah.
But it is tipping into so bad it's good territory. Like, they're really going for it. Oh my gosh. It's like you watch this with your friends and have a drinking game at how stupid it is.
I don't know. There's enough alcohol.
We'd all be in the hospital. Do not play how stupid this season is as a drinking game. You will die.
But if you have to, pace it out over 52 weeks.
I mean, we've already talked about that stupidness of Jay stepping out of behind that tribesman when Amber and Celine leaving the city. It's just stupid. It's just all stupid. But
also, they left the sewer hatch thing open, so anybody could just come down there now. He didn't even close it after they left.
Yeah, that was another stupid scene. Like, that scene, and like, I thought that was stupid. One, okay, they really firmly established that Mouse does not see Celine as her mother anymore, because when Celine and Amber are about to leave, who does she run to and jump in her arm? Amber. She jumps in Amber's arms to say goodbye, doesn't even give Celine a hug. Celine doesn't even say bye, sweetheart, nothing. Okay, so you firmly established that whole mother-father thing that she and Pride did with Mouse and Charlie never existed. Okay, fine.
She's not sad about Pride's dad.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I thought that was funny, especially since they're going to try to capitalize on the Mouse and Celine relationship later. And then the other scene that I thought was really stupid was when Ruby goes in to ask Ram about rent. And granted, Tom's performance was hilarious. I loved him in that scene. But the scene is stupid because I'm like, Ruby, she says to him, she goes, I'm here for the rent. And, you know, Ram's like, nah, Slade's department got to him. She's like, yeah, well, you guys were only supposed to be here one night. And I'm like, Ruby, it's been nearly 2 weeks and you're only bringing up rent now. That's your threshold to worry about being paid. You and Slade literally have been hanging out. And now you're like, you were only supposed to be here one night. Where's my money? And it's like, he runs Liberty now, Ebony. Like, the saloon is officially his. You work for him, apparently. Like, I just thought that was dumb because I was like, now you're bringing up rent? Now you're concerned that they stayed more than one night? It's been a fortnight, Ruby.
Well, she couldn't possibly ask him while Slade's there.
I was giving her the benefit of the doubt. I said, okay, she was just saying that as a way to just enter the room and see what he was doing. Mm-hmm. But even if you give her that, even if you do give her that, the fact is, he's right there with the laptop, the computer, doing techno paradise things. And you're like, yeah, okay, cool. We'll see what Slade has to say about this. Like,
yeah.
Come on, you've made her...
have a sign above the door saying no techno, no paradise. Deal. I mean,
and you've just made her go like, okay, well, we'll see what Slade has to say. It's like, come on, you've made her anti-techno, anti-tech, and then she's all right with Ram sitting there in a laptop, and you're just happy to just let him go on with it. It's just, come on.
He's not even in disguise.
While we're on the subject of that, though, did anyone else clock when Ram and Slade were having their conversation and Ram was like, yeah, you just gave me stuff that you could get from a shop. I need military stuff. So is that the final confirmation that they came from the military, mm-hmm. the technos? Is that it? Is that all we're going to get?
Probably.
I mean, Ram has military brat energy all over him. So.
Mm. Well, there's that photo, isn't there, in his house?
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. All the theories are correct.
Yeah.
If there were a theory.
I feel like every episode so far since we started season 5 comes down to, so no thought was put into this, and yet we are going to continue to watch and try to find thoughtfulness in the rest of the season. I feel like we're like that Greek guy just pushing the rock uphill. What are we doing?
We're trying to fill in the gaps.
Yeah. Gonna keep trying.
That's we're gonna keep trying.
Yeah,
join us next week. We're gonna keep trying, guys.
Why don't you join us? What are your theories? Tell us your theories. What do you think is going on?
Is this our midlife crisis?
Mm-hmm.
Every generation has to have one. So, oh gosh. I don't mind going crazy with you guys. Wow, Sabine. She's like, yeah.
We're way past that point. Sabine.
She's like, there are worse people to get crazy with, I guess.
We're way past that point.
That brings Series 5, Episode 10 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and we'll see you next time for Episode 11. So until then, bye.
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 Bye.